Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the 35-year sentence that Bradley Manning received and speak with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, Colin Powell's former chief of staff, who went public in 2005 with his knowledge that Vice President Dick Cheney provided the guidance that led to America's torture disgrace. We will discuss how much Manning hurt the United States compared to Cheney and why others convicted of spying for the Soviet Union, Cuba, and Russia received much lesser sentences. Then we'll look into the New York Times article, Democracy May Prove the Doom of WBAI, and examine the reasons why the Pacifica Network is losing listeners with two of its five stations facing bankruptcy. John Dingus, a professor and director of radio at Columbia University's Graduate School of Journalism and author of A Guidebook for Public Radio Journalism, joins us to discuss the expensive elections listeners are boycotting and the top-heavy governance about which the article states, unless Pacifica reforms, it will simply govern itself to death. Then finally, we will speak with James Kirchick, a journalist and foreign correspondent who was a leading voice on American gay politics and international gay rights. He was booted off RT, Russia's English-language cable network, for attacking Putin's anti-gay crackdown, accusing the RT hosts and guests of being paid propagandists for their paymaster, Vladimir Putin. We will discuss Russia's assault on gay rights and James Kirchick's article at the Daily Beast, Why American Social Conservatives Love Anti-Gay Putin. And joining us now is Lawrence Wilkerson, a retired United States Army colonel and former chief of staff to United States Secretary of State Colin Powell. In 2005, he went public with his knowledge that Vice President Cheney had provided the guidance that led to America's torture disgrace at Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and elsewhere. Currently, he teaches courses at the College of William & Mary and George Washington University. Welcome to Background Briefing, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And you're quoted in the Huffington Post of mentioning how Dick Cheney fears being tried as a war criminal. And what's your response to Bradley Manning's sentence of 35 years compared to the architects of torture, none of whom have been indicted, put on trial, or convicted?
I have to say that I have heard from no national security expert in or out of government whose views I respect, and that's a considerable number, retired or active, who has been able to convince me or wanted to convince me that the revelations of Bradley Manning or Julian Assange plus Bradley Manning have done any substantive damage to the national security of the United States of America. So with that sure knowledge, and I think anybody who looks at it closely would find that sure knowledge quite accessible, what the hell did we give him 35 years for?
Well,
as to what should have happened to those who actually committed war crimes, like the six lawyers around Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, or like Rumsfeld and Cheney themselves, that's another matter altogether, and it goes unpunished. And probably will continue to go unpunished.
Well, dealing with the former and not the latter, and that is the sentence that Manning got, when you compare it to William Colton Millay, who got 16 years trying to sell secrets, and U.S. Army policemen trying selling secrets to the Russians, David Henry Barnett, 18 years for selling classified documents, he's a former CIA agent, James Harold Nicholson, 23 years, a high-ranking CIA officer, selling classified information to Russia, and Anna Belen Montes, 25 years for passing classified information to Cuba. She was with the Defense Intelligence Agency. Earl Edwin Pitts, 27 years for giving classified information to Russian intelligence services. He was then an FBI special agent. And so on. I mean, it's unbelievable that the list of people I'm reading off really were spies for foreign powers.
This is clearly not about justice. It's about this administration, which I'm sad to say I voted not once but twice for, trying to assert itself in the national security realm in a way that defies reason. It has outbushed George W. Bush in terms of draconian measures, even tyrannical measures, from national security letters to its enforcement of the Patriot Act to the FISA Amendments Act to the surveillance state. You name it, this is the most tyrannical administration the United States of America has had in its short national history. And it defies reason. I have no idea why they're doing this. I could give you all kinds of motivations and reasons and so forth that would just touch the surface. But when you dissect it and look at it carefully, I can't fathom why they're doing this.
Well, it wasn't so long ago. In fact, it was on August the 2nd that President Obama, at a fundraiser, when he was questioned about Bradley Manning, said he broke the law and deserved to be punished. I mean, he's the commander-in-chief. Doesn't that prejudice a court-martial?
Certainly it does. Certainly does. If you're looking in the Uniform Code of Military Justice at the top rank, that's the President of the United States, the commander-in-chief, as you stated. And any statement like that from anyone in a capacity of leadership or decision-making in the system compromises a case if he pronounces on it before the case is tried. And so absolutely, this was from the apex of the system.
So do you think that, he's eligible for parole in 10 years, and there's some talk that the incarceration that he's already received and the abuse that he's already received might be counted. But still, this young man is going to spend an awful lot of time in jail, and he'll be at Fort Leavenworth. I understand that's a tough place, right?
It is a tough place, and I don't fault what you just said, but I would add that I think if his lawyers are smart, and they haven't shown me thus far that they're that smart, but I think they're this smart at least, this case won't be finally decided for another 5 to 10 years. They've got the two courts of appeal, the one in the Army and then the Armed Forces Court of Appeal. Then they've got the federal courts, the Court of Appeals that rules over the federal courts, and then they've got the Supreme Court. So as with our system in most cases like this, they could keep this case alive for quite some time. Of course, that doesn't keep him out of prison, but it does keep his case in front of the people, and it does tend to make more deliberations, if you will, that might ease that sentence in the long term.
And again, I'm speaking with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who's a retired U.S. Army colonel and former chief of staff to United States Secretary of State Colin Powell. In 2005, he went public with his knowledge that Vice President Cheney had provided the guidance that led to America's torture disgrace at Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and elsewhere. Currently, he teaches courses at the College of William & Mary and George Washington University. So given the unlikelihood of Cheney, Bush, Rice, Rumsfeld, Addington, you, et cetera, brought before the courts of justice for the hideous hit that the United States took, when you start adding some of this stuff up, it's just mind-boggling what that war cost, what the Afghan war cost, what the 2008 crash of the economy costs. Nobody's gone to jail for tanking the economy in 2008, which cost us $13 trillion, which is the entire 1 year's GDP output from the United States. I don't know. We don't really know what Iraq cost. All we know is that Iran won the Iraq war. We don't know what Afghanistan is going to be cost, but it's in the trillions. Homeland Security's cost us $1 trillion. I get the feeling that this whole situation is out of control, and there's so much focus on these people who have provided us with a public service in giving us information about how far we've gone off the rails. They get punished, but the people driving the locomotive off the cliff go scot-free.
Well, you've put your finger on it. I personally can't fathom why we are so concerned about terrorists. If you look at the number of Americans terrorists have killed in our entire history as a colony and a nation, it's less than we kill on the highways in one single year. And yet, as you pointed out, we spent, I think, somewhere between $3 and $5 trillion, killed over 300,000 people with our military instrument, and all in the name of avenging ourselves of an attack on 9/11 that killed some 3,000 Americans. Again, a total that's tragic, but beneath the number we kill on the highways each year. So why are we doing this? And I come back to my other point about why is this administration deepening and widening and making more profound the usurpation of civil liberties, the denigration of civil liberties, the abridgment of civil liberties, the violation of the Fourth Amendment, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. Why are they doing this when the threat is so minuscule? Why are we spending all this money? Why are we building the military-industrial terrorist complex? Why are we doing all this? It makes no sense.
Well, yesterday, Colonel Wilkinson, I was just listening to a tape from Martin Luther King, and as you know, in a week's time, there will be the anniversary in Washington of his famous I Had a Dream speech. And he of course, was speaking during the Vietnam War, and he cited the statistic that was often cited in those days by the anti-war forces, and that was that the cost of our military cost in Vietnam in terms of how many Viet Cong and North Vietnamese we killed, and I can't remember the figure, but it was like maybe $200,000 for every of the so-called enemy that we killed. But if you extrapolate that out today in the war on terror, given that with Homeland Security alone we spent $1 trillion, the figures for the number of these hapless terrorists that we've been picking up and stopping and who've conducted their terrorism is so few that you could probably, I don't know whether anybody's done the math, but it could be up to $1 billion per terrorist.
Oh, I've seen the math done in different places. In fact, I was in the doctor's office yesterday, and I was reading a magazine, I think it was Esquire, and they had some graphs in there. And the graph showed how much money we would have given to every single Afghan, for example, had we just said, okay, here's your money, go do your thing. Get rid of Al-Qaeda, get rid of the Taliban, here's your money. If we'd given the money to the Iraqis instead of ruining and wrecking their country. The figures are astronomical. It takes me back to 1953 when Dwight Eisenhower gave his speech where he said one fighter pilot is so many bushels of grain, it's so many modern hospitals fully equipped, it's so many elementary schools, it's so many homes for so many citizens and so forth. Well, look at it today, it's grown astronomically. You look at the F-35, the F-35 Lightning, which we're getting ready to acquire if Secretary Hagel doesn't make another decision, and I don't expect him to. Eisenhower he'd be stunned, he'd be speechless. That airplane, one single airplane, would probably bring Detroit back from ruin.
Well, that speech that you referred to that Eisenhower made, one of the lines was, every gun that is fired, every rocket launched, represents in the final analysis a theft from those who are hungry and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. A very eloquent speech that he made.
It is a very eloquent speech. And by the way, today, the difference between 53 and today is not just the order of magnitude of waste that's increased, but it's also the fact that we're just printing it today. In 53, we were actually making that money. We were actually producing something. We were actually making that money, and we were spending that money, however unwisely.
Well,
today,
also,
we're just printing it.
But back in those days, the highest tax rate was 92%.
Yes,
the wealthy paid.
Eisenhower refused to relinquish that rate for 8 years.
Right, the wealthy had to pay their freight in those days. So, just in the last few minutes, then Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, what is happening vis-a-vis justice for Dick Cheney? I saw the Showtime special, I don't know whether you saw it, on him, where he was given ample opportunity to put forth his version of history, and it was quite extraordinary how insulated he is from reality.
He is, and I watched this resuscitation campaign, if you will, this Let's Get Him Back Up Again campaign with regard to George W. Bush, and it's been fairly successful. It's been very well funded by some very well-heeled people on the right. And his poll ratings have gone from something like about 30% or so up to over 50% now. So George W. Bush is being renovated apace, if you will. Dick Cheney, I think, is incapable of being renovated. He, as you said, is isolated. I don't even think George Bush talks to him anymore. Dick Cheney would do the best, probably, if he never spoke again, never said a word again. Dick Cheney ought to be in jail.
Well, you also said that at 9/11, he and Rumsfeld went AWOL at the moment that the plane was heading towards the White House or the Capitol. Nobody's quite sure, I think, what the target was.
I think the 30 to 45 minutes after the plane struck the towers and after the decision was made to launch some U.S. aircraft in order to search for what they thought then was a third and possibly a fourth plane, if we knew about those moments, I think we'd know about the cowardice of Dick Cheney. I think we'd know about the confusion of Dick Cheney. And I think we'd know about the inability of Dick Cheney to handle the problem that he was confronted with at the time. But we'll never know that. The 9/11 Commission didn't look into it with any great degree of diligence. What they did get, I think, is still classified, along with the incredible complicity of Saudi Arabians in 9/11. We'll never know about that, or at least for 30 or 40 years we won't, unless someone somehow leaks that information, too. I think what we saw on 9/11 was a team that realized what had happened was on their watch. They thought they would get a reaction from the American people that might range from total indignation with their administration to even impeachment. So they were scared to death. And then when they realized that they could exploit it and turn it to their advantage rather than having it be turned against them for their own negligence, they did so, and did so with a vengeance. And I think Dick Cheney was the major orchestrator, along with Karl Rove, of that vengeance.
Well, that's the tragedy of the 9/11 truth, is that they keep dignifying Cheney and Bush as though they were conspirators, when in fact they're culpable for this tragedy, for ignoring all of the evidence and all the advice that they were getting, and that they should have been impeached. So isn't that a paradox?
It is. It is. But it is a statement on the American people, too. I mean, it is a statement about us. We don't seem to be able to grasp things analytically, intellectually, even intuitively, instinctually, fast enough to do anything about the problems that really confront us, whether it's the bad leadership in Washington, the national security state itself, the constant state of war. My God, it's become our raison d'etre. We've been at war now for 12, 13 years, and there is no end in sight. We're going to be striking with drones, so-called al-Qaeda, across the globe for the next 100 years, it looks like. And this is our problem. This is the American people's problem. If we don't wake up and do something about it, we have no one to blame but ourselves.
Well, Colonel Wilkerson, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who's a retired United States Army colonel and former chief of staff to United States Secretary of State Colin Powell. In 2005, he went public with his knowledge that Vice President Cheney had provided the guidance that led to America's torture disgrace in Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and elsewhere. Currently, he teaches courses at the College of William & Mary and George Washington University. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into the New York Times article about WBAI and examine the reasons the Pacifica Network is losing listeners and facing bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.